Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Slice of the Reef, our new podcast that demystifies the art of saltwater fish keeping. My name is Billy.
And I'm Giancarlo, aka Banana or Fishy Fish. We're going to be your guides today into the amazing world beneath the waves, but also in the box in your living room. Crazy, huh?
Enjoy and easy reefing.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Slice of the Reef, your go-to podcast for beginner and advanced reefing information. My name is Billy.
My name is Banana.
Today we're going to be talking. Hi, Giancarlo. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about selecting healthy fish for your reef tank or for your Fowler tank in this case. Very special episode where we're going to actually be acknowledging that Fowler people exist.
Yeah, believe it or not. They have feelings too, surprisingly.
I don't believe it when I see it. So what are we talking about today? Healthy fish.
Yeah, so today we're going to go through the process and what to look out for when you're buying fish from the store. You know, previously we talked about coral and the pros and cons of buying local online and, you know, from other hobbyists. But nobody really knows what to look out for when they buy fish. Because that's when you're at your most vulnerable. That's where you are in a situation where all you know is what your seller wants you to know. So that's where we come in. You know, we're trying to inform you so that you can make the best informed decisions on the purchase that you're about to make. Because nobody wants to pay $40 to $50 for a fish, or, you know, as you get into the hobby, a couple hundred for a fish, just to have it be something that's going to die out later on.
The number of times that's happened to me is too many to repeat. I cannot share that. It's too embarrassing.
Dude, it's devastating.
An emotionally devastating part of the hobby.
Bro, I have gone through like 5 or 6 gem tanks. I can't tell you how much I hate that feeling. It's horrible. It's straight horrible.
That's like $3,000.
It's a lot. It hurts. But the hobby's a big thing. So, you know, you just get another one and keep going. But yeah, the goal for this podcast is to make sure that you only have to buy a fish once. Mm-hmm. And that you're not stuck buying a fish several times, because the last time you got it, it left the LFS or the local fish store in a bad state. Most of what we're going to talk about today actually applies to buying it in person. Obviously, you don't get the same luxury when you're buying a fish online, you know, unless it's like one of the more open shops or like the advanced shops where they'll show you the fish before you buy it. But anyways, let's get into it. It's Billy, let's get into the schedule. How's your tank doing?
Well, everything has continued to die from last time. I still have a leather coral that's holding on, but it looks a little pissed. It should be okay because it's not like actively dying, and it's a coral, or it's a leather coral, so it should be fine. My last albiopora that was holding on barely over the course of like the last 2 to 3 days has started declining again, so I'm doing a KFC dip on that one. But most importantly, my engineer gobies, my filefish, and my 2 clownfish and their anemone are still doing fine. So
that's good. You've had those goldies for a while, right? Didn't you get them tiny?
Up to 2 years now, I think, at least with those guys. But yeah, I got them as the tiniest little babies I could find. I think one of them was starting to show like some vertical striping from their adult form, but it took him like 5 or 6 months to actually start developing.
Yeah. Do you have any... Wait, say that again? Sorry, my disco cut in that real quick.
No, I was saying I have had them for a while and I'm really glad they're still alive. It's crazy how much they've gone through. Like, I think I've had like 2 major fish losses besides this one over my many years, and they have just trucked it through each and every one. They're just doing fine, looking for snacks along the ground.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about purchasing healthy saltwater aquarium fish, you know, both in person and online. And it's going to be like 3 or 4 different segments. The first one is what to look out for when you're buying in person. And then we're going to go into like the challenges and the perks of buying fish online. And it's going to feel weird, but when it comes down to it, the two are very different realms of engagement, buying in person versus online. One of the biggest things you want to look out for when you're buying fish in person is you want to like find the right LFS. Normally, after a while of, you know, just being in the hobby, looking around and browsing, you can kind of tell what LFS are the right ones for you. You want to avoid ones that have a lot of dead fish on the bottom. You want to avoid ones where they'll actively try to push a sale on you. That's something that a lot of fish stores are really known for. They'll try to push a sale on you. When you specifically do not want to buy something, or when you're hesitant, they're going to try to encourage you to take it. It's rough. It really is rough. Because it's Billy has something to say.
One thing that a lot of LFS employees will do is if you ask them if some fish can be used in X environment, or if you tell them if you ask them a question you already know and you tell them the answer, they will confirm your bias every single time. So if you say, I heard online that you can put a tang in a 20 gallons, they will pause for a second while they say, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? And they will nod and say, oh yeah, oh my gosh. I know all sorts of people who have done that. Watch the confirmation bias of the employees, and you will see a really disappointing pattern of just straight up lying.
Yeah, a good way to filter out a fish story is by doing exactly what Billy just said, and that's looking for the confirmation bias. I had an experience where I was in the store and I saw the person behind me, and this is way when I first started the hobby, you know, enough where I knew what was kind of wrong, kind of right. But I saw the person behind me. It was like an aisle, and the person behind me was talking to an LFS employee, and they said, hey, I've got a 55 gallon, what can I get? And immediately the LFS guy went through and gave him, I don't even know what he gave him, but by the end of this, like by the end of his shopping spree, whatever it was, I saw him leaving with like 8 or 9 tangs and a full eel. Like, no, dude, no. And I could tell that he was a beginner from what he was asking the employee. He was like, oh, will this eat this? Will the eel eat pellets is what stood out to me the most. Will the eel eat pellets? And that's when I knew, like, this guy is being fully, fully taken advantage of. He's being completely manipulated by the owner. Well, not even the owner. He's being completely manipulated by the employee. And one, adding all of these fish at once into any tank is a bad idea, because you're going to boost the hell out of that nutrient cycle, out of the ammonia that you currently have, and it's going to cause issues down the road. And number two, all of these fish individually or together in a 55 gallon is just way too much. So like, that was an awakening for me, because it's kind of then when I realized that don't trust the LFS, don't trust the LFS people. Always enter with like that grain of salt. Not just a grain of salt. Take everything they say with like a massive bucket of salt, and you'll be much better off afterwards. You want to see how clean their tanks are. You want to see how well they take care of their tanks. If you go to an LFS and you see the tanks look like absolute crap, it's a really good indicator for you to just kind of hesitate buying from them. And that's an altogether kind of thing. You know, stores should maintain their tanks in a very, very proper way. It's a representation of the fish that they are selling. Like I said before, if you walk into a store and you see dead fish in every other display, fish die. Okay, fish die. I'm going to say it right now. Fish will die in an LFS. They're buying wholesale. They're buying fish that have been in the ocean literally a week before. Fish are going to die. But if they don't care enough to remove the fish when they die, or at least keep the sick ones in a separate tank, then it means that they don't care about the customer enough to give them quality fish. And that's a huge red flag. You want to see online how long they've been in the hobby. And I'm not saying that another fest needs to have good reviews to be, you know, solid or to sustain or to have what you want. It could be a store with a bunch of basic stuff, and it could be a newer one, and it could be amazing. But normally you want to see reviews and look out for the bad ones, because if you see a lot of repeated bad reviews for a store, it kind of just tells you what to look out for. But let's get down to it. You know, what to look out for in the fish. We've talked about what to look out for in the store. When it comes to the fish itself, you want to kind of make a mental checklist of things to run through to see if the fish match them before you actually purchase the fish, all right? The first one is you want to look at the coloration. Some fish are sexually dimorphic, where you'll see a color differentiation between the males and the females. Wrasses are a good example of this. Antheas are a good example of this. Some, not cardinal fish, but gobies will sometimes show this, where you'll see the males have a lot flashier, more bright color than the females. That's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about is like fish that should be one color, but you like a clownfish, and you see the orange is faded. You see the black is like a gray. The fish isn't very happy. That's something you look out for when I bring up vibrant coloration or any patches. You want to look out for spots on the fish, and not like ick, you want to find pale, uncolored spots on the fish. These are usually a sign of flukes, and they can be treated, but again, the goal is to not have to deal with these altogether, because not everything can be treated in a way that'll keep the fish safe, or that will give the fish a higher chance of making it through. You want to see fish, and sometimes they won't always do this, but you want to look out for fish that are actively swimming and interacting with their environment. If you ask an employee to feed a fish and the fish is staying on its side, and they feed the fish and the fish continues to just lay on its side, that's a bad sign. which brings me to the next point. You want to get a fish that's eating. Either get fish that is currently eating, pellets, mysis, whatever you give it, or know exactly what kind of fish you're getting if it's something that doesn't need something that's prepared. An example would be mandarins or anything in the dragonette family. A lot of fish, like butterflies, will not go after, you know, pellets or mysis. Some kinds of wrasses won't eat anything other than pods, and it won't be any prepared food. So if you're going to take on something that's got this kind of delicacy when it comes to feeding, and you're looking for a generic kind of tang or, you know, clownfish, damsel, whatever it is, if they feed it and the fish isn't eating and it's just staying on that side, that's another red flag. Yeah. If you want to buy fish, it's never a bad thing to ask the employee to feed the fish. You never want to be buying a fish where the employee is just saying, oh, we can eat, probably promise you it eats. It ate a little bit ago, or, oh, they just ate. Like mentioned by El Charo, employees will do that. And sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. Either way, it's just not worth taking the risk. If they just fed the fish, you can always come back later and try to buy the fish afterwards. If they, you know, just go back the next day. If the person has the fish and they're trying to sell the fish and they're not willing to feed the fish to the person trying to buy said fish, it's usually because the fish isn't eating. You want to look at the eyes. One thing that a lot of people don't look at is whether the eyes are clear. Opaque eyes are usually a sign of cloudy or opaque eyes are usually a sign of an infection. It can be bacterial, it can be viral. And if you see fish with Popeye, that's something you definitely don't want to deal with.
One thing I wanted to say is Popeye in particular, you just kind of get better at identifying that as you see more fish with and without it. Because certain fish will have like googly eyes, basically. And you might be suspicious that's Popeye at first, but it could just be like the way the fish looks. Some fish, of course, will be like really blatantly Popeyed, like especially angelfish.
Oh,
they get Popeye really easily.
Angelfish are very, very delicate when it comes to their eyes. Very delicate. I've always had instances where like they'll lose their eyes during quarantine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the most annoying thing ever.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. They're very sensitive to bacteria. They need they're more delicate to the water that they're in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you want to get fish that are intact. You don't want any torn or, you know, broken fins. And this isn't just because of the fact that it's been under a situation where it's been chased or harassed by another fish. This could also be because of a bacterial infection, or it could be a fungus that's eating away at the fins. Lateral line disease, for example, will get to the point in certain tanks where it will start degrading the fins. And that's why if you ever see a tang where the fins, the dorsal fin mainly, it's like a spike, and then it kind of goes back out and you don't see like that nice flat ridge, it's usually because of the fact that it's worn away from stress and then gotten infected afterwards.
This, I think, especially happens. What's the fish called? Oh, fish with streamers. They can very easily get their streamers damaged, like fin streamers, shipping. Like, I think I showed Banana a picture of this, but I saw a cowfish that was shipped with little bits of plastic stuck on its horns so it wouldn't accidentally puncture the bag with those horns or break the horns. So it looked like it had like a little, it was a little bumper car. It was really cute.
It's amazing. It's actually, I think I remember that picture. It was really funny, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to double back on the faded patches thing, especially for things like chromis and tangs. A lot of times, like, if something doesn't look like, you'll learn what a flawless fish looks like over time, but if a fish doesn't look flawless, if it has like gray patches on the outside of its skin, or red patches, that's a uranema, that's kind of a different thing. But I think tangs in particular, especially things like convict tangs and lavender tangs, they seem to come in with bacterial infections that are really late stage, but they only have like a couple patches on the outside.
Yeah, it looks like spots. You look like these. It's the difference between the dots that you'll see in ink. Mm-hmm. Actual patches are larger. Patches are larger than the dots.
Yeah, infected patches, yeah. And if they have them on the outside of their skin, they probably have them on the inside, because it takes a really weak slime coat to get those bacterial infections on the skin. And the weak slime coat is usually caused by something else.
All right. Normally, it's really recommended that if you see a fish in a bad condition, you don't try to buy it to make it better. These fish have already been through a lot, and odds are, as harsh as it is to say, there's a very low chance of it actually surviving through your tank, or if you want to quarantine, through your quarantine. And then there's some things that you normally don't catch at first sight. You just get this for observing the fish a little bit, and it's okay to you know, go to a store and just observe a fish for a bit. If the employee says, sir, you've been looking at this fish for more than 15 minutes, you got to move along. I would just leave that store altogether. That's not a store you want to be buying at. You want to look, and these are more behavior based. There are things that you won't see the moment you look at the fish, but if it's gasping for breath, that's a bad sign. That's not something you want to look for in a fish. Normal fish won't be gasping. You'll see their gills puffing up and down and up and down and up and down really, really fast. You don't want that in a fish. If you see them scratching against surfaces or the glass, if there's a rock in the display that they're in or the little tank that they're in, that's another bad sign, something else you don't really want to deal with. If there is lethargy, like the fish laying on its side, the fish isn't swimming, or the owner needs, or the employee needs to like move a little bit for it to dash a little bit and then just goes back down. Mm-hmm. That fish is most likely on its way out.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are some rises that'll do that, but you kind of learn over time what is and isn't good and bad. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know, I would just stay on the safe side and steer clear of them altogether. Because it's not worth buying fish that you're just going to have to replace again anyways. It really isn't.
Yeah.
If you see any clams or any growth, again, that's something really, really not worth it.
Growth like, so sometimes flukes will actually be hanging off of the fish, usually if they're like attached to the eyes. But sometimes they'll just be like those discolored patches, like Giancarlo mentioned. What other kind of unusual growths have you seen on fish? Brooklynella, maybe?
Brooklynella is a really big one. If you see slime on the fish, that's a really bad sign. There's a slime coat.
Yeah, we're not talking about the slime coat. Usually the slime coat is completely transparent, right?
Yeah, the slime coat's it's not transparent. Oh, well, yeah, it is transparent. You don't see it. But if you see like peeling slime that looks like a sunburn on a fish, that's usually a sign of Brooklynella, and it's not something you want to be dealing with. Number one, it's not just something you don't want in your tank. It's something that you don't want to treat or cure, have to like have any experience whatsoever. The luckiest people are the ones that have never encountered these things.
Mm-hmm. And those people, knowingly or otherwise, went to the right local fish store from the start.
Yeah.
Okay. So once you get the fish, how do you go about quarantining and observing the fish?
So the biggest thing I prefer to do is I always do copper. I know people will say, oh, prosy's the same. Oh, you can just do, you know, freshwater dips and it'll be fine. But no, you normally want to do copper to treat ick, velvet, and, well, not brook, but mainly ick or velvet. Flukes will be taken care of eventually, but I always run my fish to copper straight to 2.5, leave it there for 2 weeks. Then I'll do freshwater dips as needed, or I will do, that's what I do, acroflavulin as well, which is Ruby 2. If it's really desperate.
That's acroflavulin?
Yeah, that's acroflavulin, yeah. Ruby Frelly.
I didn't know that. I need to go freaking buy stuff.
What have you been using?
Not acroflavin. I used formalin 10% on the when I thought my comet had brook.
I'm pretty sure I have brook.
Now I believe you.
I'm sure you have brook. Yeah, formalin is, I use that as well. They're not the same thing. Now, formalin and acroflavin are two different things, but I've used both. I always, whenever I get a fish, I always run it through freshwater bath and acroflavin before putting it into copper. You never want to mix medications like that. And then I always avoid mixing antibiotics with copper or, you know, with other antibiotics, because that'll lead to bacterial blooms in the quarantine tank. But then quarantining itself is something that we're going to talk about in the whole separate episode. Right now, we're just saying that like quarantining is, or at least observation, is something that you're going to want to do with new fish from an LFS. It's just something that you kind of get in the habit of doing. And if you don't do it, it's only a matter of time until you do. You know, nobody quarantines until they have to. And it's, I don't know. There's either there's two kinds of people. The people that quarantine and the people that don't quarantine yet, because they haven't had a crash like that. But eventually, it sucks. I mean, it's heartbreaking when you lose fish like that. But what can you do? You quarantine right probably or no?
Yes, I do now. I used to not and just roll the dice. And quite frankly, I got very lucky considering how many fish I just like dropped in my tank. I mean, I do have a relatively good source for fish, like especially in SoCal, there's a lot of options that are all taking relatively good care of their fish. But I, especially because I want to start keeping tangs long term, and I want to stop like losing them to potentially avoidable things within the first like year or 2 years, I'm going to start comprehensively quarantining, especially for internal parasites, because that's like one of the big unknowns.
Yeah, for internal, the biggest thing you want to do is use Focus, bind it with either General Cure or Canna and Metro by Cecum, and then you know, bind it to your pellets and then feed into the observation tank. But yeah, like Billy said, it's like rolling the dice. And every fish that you add, the dice roll gets riskier, you know. Every time you buy another fish, it's like you're risking that fish plus all the previous fish you've got. And all it takes is one bad outbreak. And
that's the problem that I, like the mistake that I made is, I mean, if you're going to be comprehensive about quarantine, you kind of have to start doing it from your first fish, like even before your first fish. And because if you, I mean, I had ick in my tank throughout the entire existence of that 50-gallon long. My yellow mimic tang would like kind of serve as a canary in the coal mine there. If they got too stressed, they would randomly start showing spots. And that was because at some point I'd introduced it to the tank. And the moment it's in the tank, it's probably there forever.
Yeah, it's in there. I mean, you don't get rid of it. You can run the UV sterilizer to like minimize it. I've realized that does actually help with my tank, at least when you run it in line. But it really depends on how the UV sterilizer is set up. Don't say or don't count on that being your only solace if you get ick. Because normally you want to boil it all together.
Exactly. I'm going to go get some macroflavin after this. I'm really excited, actually.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a nerd, but who cares?
Ruby Reef Rally. It's just, it's really good. It's always good to have it on handy. We're going to do an episode down the road on stuff you should always have on hand just for emergencies, and that includes medication, equipment, etc. But yeah. And then, but that all comes from buying fish in person. I mean, now buying online is like a whole separate minefield. Nowadays, especially, you see like more locally, you're going to find more people selling coral and less fish. The only people, because while coral you can buy from any hobbyist local to you, fish are a lot harder to get. They're usually just going to be sold by the local fish store. And if you want the actual, you know, catalog of fish, you're going to have to resort to online. And one of the biggest obstacles for buying fish online is the fact that it's hard to inspect or to see the fish for like the quality that they are. Usually you go to an online website, they'll say, oh, like yellow tang, you add it to your cart, you purchase, that's it. It's hard to see whether you're getting a fish with ick or velvet or flukes or whatever. And especially when you go through one of the shadier sources or sources that aren't recommended, and that's usually done through reviews, you'll see what people are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the fact that, what's up?
Take reviews like on Yelp and stuff with a grain of salt, because it's usually going to be flooded with the freshwater people who buy a molly and put it in their protein shaker and wonder why it dies.
Wait, what?
What?
Wait, say it again?
The Yelp reviews for an LFS are usually going to be flooded with people who buy a molly, buy a molly fish or a platy, and they put it in their protein shaker and they're like, why did it die? I had the perfect tank size.
Oh my God.
It was like a quarter of a gallon.
Yeah. No, I'll talk about online though. Look online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you're buying fish online, you'll look at reviews. Look at Facebook reviews. Look up, if you want a good way to search for reviews for an online vendor, look up the name and then Reef to Reef. And they can see all of the Reef to Reef posts that are made for a specific vendor. And you'll see if it's overwhelmingly positive or negative. Don't just look for the 1-star, 5-star, because there's always the people that are 1-star that get a fish, treat it like shit, leave it in the box for like a day and a half, and then open it up to finally put it in the tank. And it's like, oh, my fish died. How did this happen?
Wow, that's crazy.
Crazy, right? Right? Or it's like, oh, I was quarantining it in freshwater. I don't know how it died. I literally saw a review one time when someone said they were quarantining freshwater. That's not made up. And then they didn't know it was supposed to just be like a 5-minute bath. And obviously the fish died. But yeah, so if you want to buy online, buy at your own risk. Fortunately, the bigger vendors or the vendors that are like more well-known aren't going to sell you sick or dying fish. And if you want a list, you can always DM us or post on the Discord server, and then we'll give you places that we recommend buying fish. But at the same time, you know, you kind of just want to be careful with it all. When you're looking at online quarantined places, for example, you're going to want to ask or look on the website for how they quarantine. Everyone can say that they quarantine, but the process and the methods and things that they do actually are what make a difference. You don't want places that say they quarantine, and the moment they get asked about what their quarantine practices are, they clam them up or they'll stay quiet, or they'll be like, oh, we can't tell you that it's confidential. Like that's bullshit. There's no confidential quarantine methods.
Or if there are, they're probably bad. Or they're just iodine.
Yeah, usually iodine. What's your quarantine method? Oh, we keep it in copper half therapeutic level.
For context, the biggest quarantined fish seller, Marine Collectors, they're like maybe not the biggest, but they're the like most premier looking. They have shared their entire quarantine process and a lot of their like the system setups they use on a Bulk Reef Supply video series. Like, yeah, they, if anyone was going to have a proprietary quote unquote quarantine process, it would have been them, and they've shared it with the entire world.
They have. Because it's one, the transparency makes it so you can trust them, because like they tell you exactly what they're doing with the fish. And then two is the fact that they themselves are not gatekeeping the process. It's not a process that requires a chemical that you've got to, you know, climb the Himalayas for. No, it's basic copper, it's prazi, it's chlorine phosphate. That goes to a store as well. That method, that mentality applies to LFS as well. If they're not willing to say what their quarantine process is, don't trust them. Don't look at them. A lot of the times, what most LFS will do is they'll keep their copper at like, and this is not online, this is in store. They'll keep their copper at like 1.5 or like at around 1. And what that would do is it'll suppress parasites. It'll suppress a lot of bacteria, a lot of things that you don't see until you take it home. And I think we've gone to the point of the hobby where that's just standard practice. Almost every single store is going to have that. They'll keep the copper at an elevated level. And then after a while, they'll just sell the fish out of that, straight out of that. I know someone who, a store that said they quarantine. I was like, oh, what's your process? And they're like, oh, we keep it at, we use copper for a week and a half. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, first off, that's too little. And I asked them, I was like, oh, like how long do you, what level do you keep them copper in? And then they said, oh, what's recommended? Like, we just dose whatever is recommended. And I'm like, so what do you test it with? Oh, we don't test it. We just dose it. And I'm like, no.
An important thing to call out is if they use the same copper quarantine on all their fish, they're probably doing like 0.2 ppm.
Yeah.
And 0.2 ppm is not therapeutic. It's not even close to therapeutic. So it's maybe killing like 10% of the ick spores that are in the water. And that's about it.
Usually it becomes like a cesspool. There's a local, what's the word, a distributor. A wholesale distributor back when I lived in Chicago. I'm going to cut that up. But so there's this distributor where I used to live. When you go there, like you realize that it's literally a cesspool of sick and bacteriated fish. Every kind of thing that exists that a fish can catch, their tanks will have. So that's really something you got to look out for, or like keep in mind when you're buying fish. Where they get it from matters. Because a lot of the times, all the fish, like in that certain facility, all the fish will go into there, you know, and I'm talking like it's a giant warehouse. I mean, they've got thousands upon thousands upon thousands of fish, and they all go into these, like, I don't know how to describe it, several thousand long row tanks, and it's all connected. So what one fish has is going to immediately spread to everything else. I've gotten a few fish from there myself, not myself, but for someone that was local, mm-hmm. and they immediately, from putting it in, the next day it appeared, the day after that, three of the fish died from velvet. You know, buying online does have that, the downsides of not being able to see the fish and not knowing where they came from. That's why if you're going to buy online and you quarantine, and you don't quarantine, it's recommended you get it from somewhere that does. You're going to pay a bit more. It's better to pay $80 for a $50 fish that's fully quarantined than paying $50 for the fish and then paying $50 for it again. You know, it's just not worth it. You're better off getting the fish right the first time than buying a multiple. That's always been my comment on it. That and the fact that if you get a fish wrong or you get a fish sick, you're going to lose not just that fish, but all the fish that are in the tank with it. So quarantining and observation for any unquarantined fish is always recommended, if not highly, highly encouraged. What are your thoughts on it, Billy?
What was the question? I ran out of stuff to say. You know so much more about this than I did. So I'm just kind of like, I'm learning from you. I'm listening and absorbing from you.
Feeling. It's just in the spiel. But yeah, that's it. No, we're just summarizing it up. Just summarizing nice. Things.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're just going to get better at it over time. And until you're experienced, don't buy a fish the first time you see it. What I do is I just spend a ridiculous amount of time in my local fish stores. Every fish I see that I haven't seen yet, I will Google and like find the care requirements and stuff. I don't stay like after they're closed or anything. I'm not one of those Karens. But I'll go like in the middle of the day and I'll spend like 2 to 3 hours just going rack to rack and learning all I can. If you don't have time to do that because you have like a life unlike me, you can just write down the names of the fish you see that you're unfamiliar with. Do not ask the fish store, like the LFS employees, for advice until you've established that they're actually going to give good advice. The way you can do that is to watch for those the confirmation bias practice that I mentioned earlier, where they will say anything to confirm a bias that you say, if it will result in you buying the fish. All those other red flags obviously too, if they don't meet those parameters, you should not start like listening to their advice. But certain stores, you'll just walk in and you'll know, you'll see, you'll feel a difference. You'll know that they're taking care of their fish properly. You'll know that they're going to give you the healthiest fish possible and they're not going to lie to you. But even in those stores, write down the names of the fish, maybe ask questions of the employees, and then go home and verify those answers. You have to do a lot of homework, because otherwise you're going to be burying a lot more fish if you don't adequately prepare for it.
Yeah. It's always risk. It is very difficult. And the problem is that with the prices that they come, you don't want to make these kinds of mistakes. You don't want to pay like $200, $300 for a tank and then say, oh shit, this thing is covered in uranium, you know. And don't buy sick that fish with the intentions of treating it at home. You know, it doesn't matter if they'll give you a crazy good deal on that fish. If they give you a really good deal on a sick fish, it's because it's going to die anyways and they don't want to lose it. Buying that fish with the sake of, you know, trying to save it just isn't worth. Because one, you're putting yourself through all that stress, all that, you know, money, risking all the other fish you have in a quarantine tank, or if you're putting it straight into your display, which I really hope you wouldn't, putting them all at risk. But two, you're literally going to be end up paying them more, if not as much, as they paid for the fish and subs. It's really not worth.
And it gets really old, buying a fish for like $80 and then it dies overnight and you have no idea why. So don't learn the hard way. Just be patient.
Exactly, Billy. Nah, but don't be afraid to ask us any questions that you might have. You know, we're always available via DMs, just posting the server that we're always active in. You can also just make a point to tie this episode with a previous one, you know, the one where we actually gave you a 5-star system how to scale fish difficulty. Just pair this with that, and use the other episode to pick out what kind of fish you want. And now that you've got like the specific species of fish in your mind that you're looking for when you go into a store, you know how to pick out the best one. Clear fin, good eyes, make sure it's active, make sure it's not laying on the side, yada yada. You know, everything that we've just spent the last few minutes talking about, like hour or so talking about. The best thing to keep in mind is just use your personal judgment when you buy fish. And that's something that nobody else, like no checklist will really give you. Just use your own judgment. You know what your tank is like, you know what your scale is like, you know honestly whether you're going to be able to quarantine or not. We've talked about a lot of that. We'll have a more in-depth video or episode on quarantining down the road, and it doesn't look like we have any questions. So on that note for today, thank you guys for joining, and thank you for, you know, listening to our episode. We'll see you guys next week with the next one.
Farewell and easy reefing.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Slice of the Reef,
your number one podcast for all things fishy, with your hosts, Giancarlo and Billy. Be sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere else that podcasts are streamed. That way, you'll never miss a show. If you like the show, make sure you join us on discord.gg/aquariums, where we go live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Central or 12 p.m. Pacific. We also have a Q&A session, and we're very interactive with our listeners, so it's a lot of fun to join. Until then,
farewell and easy reefing.